And now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the GEICO app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the GEICO app. Look it in the mouth. Get amazing services. Thank you.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audible.com/ABPN. You have over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Welcome to The Two-Man Game, a coaching podcast brought to you by the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. I am Matt Barnes. You can find me, my sports-related tweets, rants, arguments on Twitter at Matt_Two-Man Game. I am joined, as always, by my co-host Chris Hines. You can find him on Twitter at SimplyHoops. You can find his writing at simplyhoops.wordpress.com. And we are coming to you pretty much exactly at the midpoint of the season, just a few days after our previous podcast that we did. We'd like to thank all the listeners for the responses we've gotten, the downloads and everything that we've received from you on Blog Talk Radio, almightyballer.com, and iTunes. We are going to be discussing the latest clash of the NBA Titans between the Warriors and the Cavaliers that took place as the nightcap on Martin Luther King Day. The Warriors pretty much dispatched the Cavaliers very quickly in this game. It was not really much of a contest after the first quarter. What did you think of Cleveland just pretty much mailing it in, Chris? Did you really think that that was of anything of consequence? Or was it just that they've been on the road for 10 days, played a lot of games, and they just ran out of gas?
I think that's part of it. It's sort of both. I think they ran out of gas, but even when you watch them play other teams, they just seemed really uninterested. You know, these past maybe, I would say, the past week and a half for the Cavs have been kind of strange. They just really don't seem like they care what's going on. You know, LeBron seems a little frustrated. He keeps asking management for another playmaker, and they seem to ignore him. You know, they went and got Kyle Korver, who's a great shooter, obviously, but he basically said, we need another point guard, and they are sort of ignoring him, and that sort of showed in this Warriors game. And a lot of people are trying to downplay this game, but I think it was a big deal simply because the Warriors had lost to the Cavs four times before beating them. And that says a lot because that affects your confidence. You know, when you play a team, you lose to them four times in a row, and that's counting the NBA Finals. It's just like, oh my God, like that team is considered your kryptonite at that point. And for the Warriors to go in there and win, like, even though it was at home and Kevin Love did go out in the second half, it still did a lot for their confidence. They sort of got the mental edge, you know, because the Warriors seemed to be getting bullied by the Cavs the last few games. You know, when they played on Christmas Day, it did seem like they got bullied and pushed around a little bit. But the Warriors out-rebounded the Cavs 69-45. Like, that's just an insane number right there. And usually the Cavs on the other end of that, you know, they're usually the bullies. But the Cavs just seem really uninterested to me. You know, they seem like they're trying to play a little out of their style. Like, they want to be a three-point shooting team. They're about third or fourth in the league right now. And that's just not who they are. They need to get back to being the bullies they were, you know, where they just really bully teams and force you to sort of submit to their playing style, just impose their will. You know, when they played against the Warriors, they just looked lost out there.
They definitely did. And one thing that really jumped out to me was the play of Kyle Korver. Kyle Korver was told publicly by LeBron to basically shoot the ball every time he touches it. And I really feel like he's taken that literally. I really feel like at certain points of that game, he was taking shots that he didn't need to take. He took a shot when the game was still relatively close in the first half where he took an escape dribble and then shot about a 27-footer that was still slightly contested. He just doesn't seem to be fitting. I know that it's early. I know that it's too soon to make judgments as to whether or not he's going to fit or whether or not he's going to help. But he does not look good. LeBron had an off night. He was 6 for 18. Kevin Love left the game at half, basically with the back soreness. I think the one thing that we do need to address is the flop that was heard around the world, supposedly the flop that was heard around the world. Draymond Green, as always, getting himself into some sort of skirmish with one of the Cavaliers. He does like to go after LeBron. We saw that in game 4 of last year's finals. That, to me, was a hit. He did hit him. LeBron did embellish the hit on the way down. He did give the snap neck kind of motion that you would do that looks something similar to a car accident. But was that really a flop, and was it really a flagrant?
I don't think it was. I think in today's NBA, it garners a flagrant foul, yes. But for LeBron to be as big as he is, I think he could have taken that foul and kept going. But I feel like he wants to draw that attention so much that he says, forget all of that. I'm just going to take the foul and fall and lay on the ground dramatically. And, you know, it's just, I'm kind of tired of the flopping. Especially, like, LeBron is too big for that. He's 6'9", 250. Like, and then after the game, he said he's a football player. It's like, they would murder you.
Yeah, that wasn't a football player move. The fall.
Like, imagine him coming across the over the middle as a tight end, and one of them linebackers from the Steelers is about to take his head off. I don't think he will survive a game in NFL. So just stop with the football player comments altogether. But I don't know. I think it was a flop, in my opinion, and I'm tired of it. Like, at some point, Draymond is going to keep doing it. But at some point, LeBron has to stop flopping and let Draymond know, all right, stop hitting me, stop doing this, stop with the extracurriculars, you know, because you could eventually get hurt by something like that. You know, that's possible. So it's like when you flop like that, it's almost like the boy who cried wolf type of thing. Like, if you always flop whenever you're touched, then we won't believe if you're actually really hurt, you know?
Yeah, and really, it didn't seem like it was much more than a common foul. Was it a flagrant foul because the victim was LeBron James?
Partially, yes. Partially. But then I feel like if any player would have gotten hit like that, then it would have been a flagrant just because of the environment that they were playing in. The game is really tense. It was still close at that point, you know, and LeBron was on a fast break. We know it was just an intense time in the game, as well as him being LeBron, of course. So that kind of hyped the situation. You know, so I think if any player would have gotten it, but with LeBron, he's guaranteed, like, it's not even without question. I knew he was going to get a flagrant. I just didn't know if it would be one or two. You know, I think they didn't do the two, rightfully so, because he would have been, of course, kicked out of the game and stuff. And that was just extra dramatic. But it was definitely a flop. But at the same time, Draymond did hit him a little extra. It was unnecessary.
Yeah, I do think that. And then his actions on the sideline following the play, I think, just basically told you that he was just being an antagonizer. The way that he kind of motioned to the crowd and was making facial expressions like he didn't think that it was really that big of a deal. I mean, he did have a monster game. He had a triple-double. He put up 11 points, 13 boards, 11 assists, also with 5 blocks, and he had a plus-minus of 42, Jesus. Which looks like a misprint when you first review the box score. But we're getting to this point now with Cleveland. They're sort of struggling, and it really kind of brings up a thing for me and sort of makes me think of other championship teams in the past that would sort of coast their way through the regular season, and they're sort of on cruise control, conserving energy for when they really are going to need it. I mean, if we look at the potential matchup in June of the Cavaliers and the Warriors for the third straight year, this will be the 7th year that LeBron makes the finals, which when you make the finals, you're basically guaranteed to play 100 games. There's a lot of miles on those tires for LeBron James. I know that he's a freak. I know that he's really something that we've never seen before, but he is 32 years old, and we're talking about a 7th trip to the finals. Are the Cavaliers just going to cruise out the rest of this season and for some of the Eastern Conference playoffs based on the quality of their competition? are we just going to see them kind of turn it on when they want to kind of thing?
Yeah, I think they'll cruise. I wrote an article about this a few weeks ago. I think that the Cavs being in the East, just it helps LeBron a lot because they don't have to do too much. They don't have to put in a lot of effort. You know, for them, it's easy. They just pretty much have to show up and they can win in the East because not because they're so great all of the time, but it's mainly because the what the other teams have on the floor. Like, every other team in the East that can compete with them is missing one or two pieces. Like, the Celtics still need a rim protector. The Raptors still need a good wing. You know, like, if the Raptors had Jimmy Butler, then we could have a conversation about them winning the East. But they still, every team needs another piece. You know, so with every team missing a piece, the Cavs are the most put together out of all those teams. Now, when you look in the West, of course, there's a lot more competition. So you don't really have the luxury to coast. Teams like the Spurs, the Warriors, and this season, the surprising Rockets are always good, you know, always. So the Cavs just have that luxury. LeBron has had that luxury his entire career, to be honest, to where he hasn't had much of a fight to really get to the finals.
Right, yeah. Aside from a few series with the Indiana Pacers early in the Miami Heat play of his tenure of 2010 to 2013 or so, when Indiana was more formidable than they are now, they did give him a little bit of a scare. They took him to 7 once, and I don't see anything like that happening. The Raptors, like you said, seem like they're still a piece away. They are going to have another nice regular season. They are starting to even nip at the Cavaliers' heels at this point. They're only a couple of games back. So they will be there, and they could potentially be the Eastern Conference final opponent for Cleveland. Boston, to me, seems like a more complete team, even though they still are behind Toronto in the standings. They seem like a team that is more balanced, that has more threats, that is probably coached a little bit better than the Toronto Raptors. So I guess we will kind of wait and see what ends up happening with the seeds that are just under Cleveland. But as of now, it's sort of looking like they're just going to try to be one of those teams that turns it on when they need to and kind of cruises when they don't. And I think that a really important thing in all of this that is being overshadowed about this whole blowout by the Warriors is that they did play a 7-game road trip. They were on the road for quite a while. It was the last game of the road trip. And they just, I mean, Kevin Love is in bad shape. When he walked off the floor and he's having his issues with his back, he basically looked like a guy at 24-hour fitness that had been playing 5-on-5 and was just wore out and ready to go home.
Hey, I agree with that. I noticed that too. And he didn't even sit on the bench. He actually laid on the floor like Larry Bird used to. And it was kind of shocking to me. And I'm not sure why, but people haven't been talking about that too much. But I think Kevin Love's health is definitely an issue that the Cavs should be worried about. Because we remember the finals 2 years ago when Kevin Love nor Kyrie were playing and LeBron was by himself and they ended up losing. So I think that it would even be a problem for them to make it out of the East if they don't have Kevin Love. You know, that could be an issue. Because he this season, we've seen him play much better. He's been a much more important piece to the team. He is much more valuable now. He's performing a lot better now.
Yeah. I mean, he's really coming into his own. This has been undoubtedly, by a wide margin, the best year that he's had with the Cavaliers. And we're talking about a guy that was basically all but assumed that he was going to be traded by Cleveland at some point through the first couple of years of his tenure. It was like, when are they going to get rid of this guy? His name is in trade rumors. All of the time we're hearing on a lot of the morning talk shows, are the Cavaliers better off without Kevin Love? And now he really is playing well, and I think you're exactly right. They really need to just get all of their health in line and make sure that when they head into the playoffs that everyone is healthy.
Yeah, man. Health is going to be a big question for them now. And like you said about LeBron having all those miles, people overlook that a lot. And he's been healthy his whole career, which is great. And I would hate to see him break down, but I think that they definitely might need to rest him. And if they start resting LeBron, of course, they might not get that one seed because the Raptors are right there. So it's going to, the whole Eastern Conference is just a big mess, and it'll be interesting to see how the season finishes out.
Yeah, it is. It's much tighter than it has been in years past. So we're going to move on to another Eastern Conference team. A team that we briefly mentioned in the first segment with the Cavs. We're talking about the Boston Celtics. The Celtics are 26-16. They're currently third. They're just behind Toronto in the East. So they're on pace for about 52 wins. Brad Stevens, once again, is doing a great job with that team, with that roster. You look at that roster on paper, and apart from Isaiah Thomas and Al Horford, it's really a lot of role guys, and the role players pretty much fill their roles just about as well as they possibly could, and they fit into that system. It's a gritty team, a disciplined team. They play good defense. Avery Bradley is very solid. Really, the standout on that team is Isaiah Thomas. He's averaging over 28 points a night, and I really feel like this guy absolutely has to be an all-star. He's probably not starting, but he absolutely should, and I would say will be in the All-Star game representing the Eastern Conference All-Star weekend in New Orleans. But what do we really think about this team, Chris? How far do you see them going? Are they really a contender? What do you think of the job that Brad Stevens has done as a coach?
Brad Stevens is one of my favorite coaches. One of the things that he does well is inbounds plays. Like, their out-of-bounds plays are just great. You know, like, they if they don't score, they usually get a nice set going, you know, to where everybody's just standing around. And that's one of the things I really admire about his coaching. And I feel like everybody is performing to the best of their abilities right now. And Isaiah Thomas has just been cooking in the fourth quarter of every game. He's honestly MVP sleeper, in my opinion. Just with if we weren't seeing the amazing seasons we're seeing from James Harden and Westbrook, you have to put Isaiah Thomas in that conversation. Just with the way he's carried this team, you know, and I just really respect what Brad Stevens is doing. I don't know how far they can get in as far as the playoffs go, but I do see them finishing third, definitely, because after you get past Cleveland and Toronto, Boston has to be right there in third because the Knicks are just a mess. The Hornets can't be consistent with their winning ways. And the Bulls just don't have enough. So the Celtics are right there. I do think that come playoff time, they'll need another rim protector and possibly another scorer. So I wouldn't be shocked if they made a move during the trade deadline. They need to get somebody like a Nerlens Noel or Tyson Chandler. They need a big guy who can protect the rim and just, you know, move back and forth and hopefully some type of a wing player. You know, if they can get a rim protector and a wing player, then I mean, like, imagine if they could get Rudy Gay and Nerlens Noel somehow, you know, just giving up those picks. I mean, that'd be a pretty scary team, you know.
Right. Oh, absolutely. They do, as you mentioned, they do have a ton of draft picks. Danny Ainge is really the king of the draft pick trade when you look at the history of what he's done. He did fleece, without a doubt, the Brooklyn Nets and their owner, Mikhail Prokhorov, for draft picks, what seems like to be for half a decade, for Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce. And that looks now just like a horrible deal, considering that Brooklyn is one of the worst teams in the NBA, and they're giving these high draft picks to Boston. And KG and Paul Pierce are both long gone from Brooklyn. So he can and probably will make a move. I mean, Isaiah Thomas is the leader of that team when you look at the statistics, but we do have guys that are making big contributions. Al Horford is solid. He's never really, I would say, been great, but he is a very solid player. He's at 15-7. Just about right where he is most years. Avery Bradley, almost 18 points, just under 7 rebounds. He's shooting 41% from downtown.
Ooh.
And he's just, yeah, he's a very solid guy. I mean, this is a guy that nobody ever talks about, but we look at these numbers, he's right under 18 a night and seven boards. And he's a fantastic defender. I think the one guy on Boston that is an enigma that hasn't really turned out to be what they wanted is Jaylen Brown. Now, the expectations for Jaylen Brown were probably a little bit higher than they should have been, because I don't think he should have been the third overall pick in the draft. But we look at this guy, and he's super athletic, but he has not really done a whole lot this season so far, and I don't really see him making a big contribution. So is it only picks that are going to be up for grabs in terms of the Celtics and them making a deal? Or is there possibly a guy that they can use to move maybe a Jay Crowder if they're looking at getting somebody like Nerlens Noel or Tyson Chandler? So yeah. Tyson Chandler, he does make quite a bit of money. So you're going to have to come really close when we're talking about trading it for a guy like Tyson Chandler. Do the salaries have to either line up at something like 80 or 90%. Isn't that right?
Yeah, it has to be around 80, between 80 and 90, I think. It's all, and it also depends on the salary cap and what you have available, if you can take on more of the contract. But I do think that they can give up a lot more. Only players I see that aren't tradable is Isaiah Thomas and Al Horford. And I would honestly say Avery Bradley, because he's a good contributor this season. He's improved his offensive play like dramatically. So those three guys are the only guys you have to keep around. Everyone else and every other pick should be up for grabs, because now is the time for them to get that extra piece so they can go the next step. You know, if they can throw together some sort of deal to get Jimmy Butler, I think you have to do that. But if you give up Jay Crowder and a couple picks, even if you have to give up Marcus Smart as well, then you can give those up to get a guy like Jimmy Butler. That's definitely worth it. I'm not sure if Chicago would do it, but if they are even willing to converse about that, you have to go in there with an open mind. And if you're even going to get Nerlens Noel, you should be willing to give up Kelly Olynyk or something like that, or Jarebko. If you want to get Tyson Chandler, that's going to cost you a lot more. But you still have to be willing to give more. But the only players you don't give up, Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley, and Al Horford, those guys have to stay. They're like the core of that team. So everyone else is up for grabs right now, honestly.
Right. Yeah, I just don't think that if you were to trade a guy like Avery Bradley, I just don't think that you would ever get the value that you are going to be giving up, because this guy does so many things. I mean, his stats are more than solid. And on top of that, like we've already mentioned, his defense on the perimeter, he's one of the better on-ball defenders in the entire league. So, I mean, I really do. I like those possible acquisitions. I feel like Jimmy Butler, he's almost, I would say, as far as what Boston has to give up, I would say that he's an unrealistic get for them. I don't think that he's somebody they could snag with the assets that they do have, but I don't necessarily think that they need him. I mean, if they are willing to keep this team together and just kind of ride out the remaining years of LeBron's prime, they're going to be one of those teams that is right there along with the Milwaukee and some of these other teams. So I really think that they're just going to kind of have to take their lumps. They'll make the playoffs. They either make it to the second round or potentially to the East Finals. And that's a great season for this team. I mean, we look at this team before Brad Stevens showed up, and they were really just falling apart. They're on the heels of the end of the era of Paul Pierce and Garnett and Rondo, and that was kind of just going, because at that point, a few years back, Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce, by the time they were sent to Brooklyn, they were both pretty much washed. They were done. They weren't really capable of carrying a franchise anymore. So they've got this guy in Isaiah Thomas, a guy that's been passed now to his third team, and he's putting up almost 30 a night. And this guy's 5'9". He's leading the league in the scoring, or leading the league in fourth quarter scoring, which is just incredibly impressive when you look at the other guys that are on this list. What is it that's so clutch about Isaiah Thomas, and how impressive is it that at 5'9 in crunch time, this guy is leading the entire NBA in points.
I'm not even sure. I feel like his shot selection has changed. Like, coming off of screens, he knows when to shoot it now. I think he makes better decisions. He doesn't just take every open shot. He attacks the rim a lot more in the right situations. He can maneuver a lot better around the rim as far as finishing goes. So, I don't know. I feel like in the fourth quarter, they let him go a little bit too, you know, where his teammates are kind of like, okay, we're going to let him operate. We'll help him, but we're not just watching and not being useful. But they actually set a lot of good screens for him. It seems like Brad Stevens just calls the right plays, and it seems like it's a very good environment for him to be successful in. Because if you remember him playing in Phoenix with the Suns, it was just too many guards there in the way, and he could never operate. You know, so now he's in a situation where he knows, okay, I'm going to be the primary ball handler. And the best part about what they do is have Marcus Smart or Terry Rozier, who take that responsibility from him sometime. You know, they bring the ball up the floor or whatever, so he's not always being pressured, and he can kind of take a break and get a breather. The Warriors started doing that with Curry, and that helped Curry a lot. You know, just having Draymond bring the ball up or Clay bring the ball up, that takes some pressure off your lead guard. And doing that with Isaiah Thomas, it's been really helpful for him, you know. And he's just in a perfect environment now to really flourish.
I would say so. And you look at this guy's contract, he's not even making $7 million a year, which in today's NBA, I mean, he might as well be playing for the minimum. I mean, he's making $7 million. You're getting 28 a night out of a guy that makes less than $7 million.
And wow.
That's unbelievable to me. When you mentioned the Phoenix thing, I'm so glad that you did that, because we're looking at a guy that obviously had this potential all along. He was playing with Eric Bledsoe and Goran Dragic, and Jeff Hornacek, the much maligned coach of the New York Knicks now, was in Phoenix at that time, and he would play those three guys together. Isaiah Thomas, Eric Bledsoe, and Goran Dragic on the floor all at the same time, and one of them would end up having to guard a three, and it was silly. What really comes to mind now with this whole thing with Isaiah Thomas, with a lot of the smaller players that are making their way in the league, making a name for themselves in the league, we look at the style of play now. We've said it many times. We're sort of in a positionless era. Everything is far more spaced out. The guy with the back to the basket planted on the block is sort of an endangered species at this point. So is a guy like Isaiah Thomas and some of these other guys, the smaller guards in the league, are they really, how much do they benefit from the style of play, the spaced out style of play, the three ball going up in high frequency? Does that contribute at all to their success that we're seeing with these smaller guards?
Oh, most definitely, because now it doesn't matter as much as it used to, because now if you're a small guard, you don't really have to worry about it, because you don't have to worry about a big guard posting you up and bullying you all the time, because they don't really do that anymore. Another thing is the bigs now, they don't want to post up, so you can attack the rim and finish, or you can just have him set screens for you and rim run, like every time. Just set a screen, roll to the rim. That's really all NBA is now. We're going to move the ball, stretch the floor, and everybody's going to shoot, and the big guys are going to rim run every single possession, and the little guys can stay outside and shoot. Or now that big guy is, instead of the center being posted up in the middle in the way, now that they're out either the short corner or even all the way in at the 3-point line sometimes, now the little guy can finish at the rim. The fact that the Celtics can have Al Horford set a ball screen and instead of rolling, he pops. Isaiah has a free lane a lot of the time. He can just go and finish, and there's nobody there to stop him because the other team center is out on the three as well. So it really benefits the small guys.
Right, and he's so crafty, and he's such a strong guy, and really – it is good to see him succeed, because we're talking about a guy that, I mean, not a lot of people were expecting a lot of things from Isaiah Thomas. I mean, he is a smaller guy. He came in the league a few years ago when this pace and space style was sort of in its infancy. So the expectations weren't particularly high. He was the 30th pick in the draft. He exceeded all expectations. And this is just a great success story with Isaiah Thomas. So I really feel like Boston, they probably are a few years away, but they are going to make a run and be contenders at some point if they keep this nucleus together, if they keep Brad Stevens on the bench, which they'd be fools not to. So I really think that we can expect big things out of these guys for years to come.
Oh, man, I definitely agree. I don't know. I feel like if they make some type of move to get either a rim protector or a good wing, then they could potentially compete at a higher level with the Cavs. I won't say beat. I'm not going to say that. But they'll be able to give the Cavs a run for their money if they can get one more piece. Just one more.
Absolutely. So with that, we are going to move on to our final topic of the night. But before we do that, we do need to pay some bills. So we are going to let everybody know that the Two-Man Game and the Almighty Baller Podcast Network is brought to you by Steiner Sports Memorabilia. Steiner Sports is a leading producer of authentic sports memorabilia and hand-signed collectibles. When listeners use the promo code ALMIGHTY at checkout, they receive a 20% discount on their purchases. So if you are a big fan of the Boston Celtics, you could go to Steiner Sports Memorabilia and get yourself a autographed picture of Isaiah Thomas, enter in the promo code ALMIGHTY, and just like that, you save 20% on a signed photo of one of your favorite NBA players. So with that, we are going to move on to our final segment. We're going to talk about a team that we've talked about at length before, the Los Angeles Clippers. The Clippers are sort of fading. They have been passed by the Rockets. They are currently also dealing with a rash of injuries, most notably to Chris Paul. Chris Paul has left thumb issues. He tore the ligament in his left thumb, and as of now, there's no timetable for his return. What does this do to their season, Chris? Is this just, are they done?
Yeah, in my opinion, they're done, man. The Clippers really need to make some changes. I mean, because if you just look at what this team's been through the last 4 years, since Chris Paul and Doc Rivers arrived in L.A., they haven't done too much. Every year, it's something that stops them from getting to the next step, you know. And with Blake Griffin being a free agent next season, I think Chris Paul has to be coming up too. They just don't have enough to get past even the Rockets now, or the Spurs, or definitely not the Warriors. So it's almost guaranteed to not win a championship. Your injury riddle at this time, you just pretty much have to blow it up. You know, I will be surprised if they don't make some type of trade move, man. You almost have to at this point, because this was supposed to be their year. You know, they started off like 12-2, and they just had everyone hyping them. And the whole time, I kept reminding people, the Clippers will always be the Clippers. They will always find a way to let you down, and they did once again. Whether it's through injury or play, they always do it. You know, like me being from LA, I know the Clippers have always been this way. So I think if Chris Paul wants to win, he has to find a way to, they might want to, you know, find a way to get Carmelo over there. That could help him some type of way. You know, they just have to make some sort of move, because the formula they have is, I mean, how long do you try something before you realize it's not working? You know, it's just not going to work. So we need to do something different. And now is the time. Like, the longer they wait, the less they're going to get for a guy like Blake Griffin. Because when teams look at his injury history, it's like, okay, his value sort of decreases because he's always been hurt. Every season in his career, he's been hurt pretty much. DeAndre Jordan is healthy for the most part, but he can't make a free throw to save his life. And then Chris Paul gets hurt. Chris Paul gets hurt as well. So that sort of messes up players' trade value. And I mean, they can try all the small forwards they want to, but none of them are producing at the level they need them to. So for this team, when they came into this season, they were one of the teams who said to themselves at the beginning of the training camp, if we don't win the championship or at least make it to the conference finals, this is a failed season for us. And honestly, we can look at it from this point already and say they won't be making it there. I just don't see how they get there. You know, we have too many other teams that are obviously much better than them. Barring injury, of course, I just don't see how the Clippers don't. They have to make a move. They have to, because this is not working. It's not working.
No, it isn't really. I mean, they're 29-14. They are on a 7-game win streak, but things are going to change for them, because Chris Paul is the heartbeat of that team, and they really do. They do need to do something as far as the roster goes, because at this point, at this point right now, it's an indefinite timetable for his return. At some point, we will know exactly how long he's going to be out, but In the meantime, we're talking about Raymond Felton and Daddy's little boy, Austin Rivers, running the show. And, I mean, that's just not – it's not good enough in the Western Conference, which really is just thick with point guards. If you don't have Chris Paul and your answer is Raymond Felton or Austin Rivers, things aren't going to be looking good. And not only really that, it's that they do, as you said, with the whole possibility of trading for someone like Carmelo, there is a hole at the three. There's sort of always been a hole at the three for these guys the entire Doc Rivers era, because we look at the guys that have played three on this team, and we're talking about guys like Jared Dudley, Matt Barnes, Paul Pierce is still there. He's a shell of himself. They have Mbamute, who's still there. And that's really where the hole lies, I feel like. And their schedule is about to get really tough. They've got some matchups against some of the best teams in the Western Conference. They face Golden State three times over the next 15 games and a couple of other teams as well that are very high in the standings. So they are going to have some troubles. They will start losing games. The 7-game win streak will become history. I mean, is Carmelo, is that really, would he waive his no trade clause to go to the Clippers to be with Doc Rivers and those guys? Is that a place where you could see him landing?
The money portion could be difficult. And the Clippers would definitely have to give up Blake Griffin. So I'm not sure if they will want to do that, but Melo will be smart too, because if you look at Melo's situations, he's pretty much in the same situation as Chris Paul, where they are set up to be some of the greatest players to not win a ring, to be in that Charles Barkley conversation. You know, we were some of the best players of our time, but we did not win a ring. Carmelo because of LeBron, and Chris Paul because of injuries, and he just played in a tough conference. So I think that they could possibly try to win together. I mean, Wade and LeBron did it, so why not have Chris Paul and Carmelo try it? I mean, what's the worst that could happen? You go there and you don't win. If you stay in New York, you're obviously not going to win there. So I think it would be smart for Melo to go and play with Chris Paul. We know they're friends, and you know their wives had a good relationship. So why not go there? I think Carmelo would be crazy not to leave New York for LA of all places.
Right. Yeah, that's really a place that would be a good landing spot, because like you said, his wife, she is a celebrity in her own right, and she does really, I think, enjoy the big city feel, because when Melo was looking for his way out of Denver, New York was very high on the list, and it was very high on the list because of the atmosphere that New York offers. So looking at the Clippers, looking at their future, looking at their personnel, looking at Doc Rivers, really what we need to do as far as the rest of the league is use these pieces that they have and make a run at trying to build, and pardon this expression because I feel like it is just so overused at this point, but they really do need to try to build a super team in a sense and land another superstar, because we really do need another team that is loaded with big names to go after Golden State. And right now they're at least one guy short. They're probably more than one guy short. And somebody is going to have to do something.
Right? Somebody has reason- to. Somebody has to. It has to be the Clippers. Why not? Why wouldn't Carmelo and Chris Paul go play together? And then you have Melo in the corner shooting. You have DeAndre as a rim runner. And Chris Paul can do his pick and roll work with DeAndre, and you have JJ Redick as a shooter too. Now all you need is another guy there to rebound. I mean, that's an ideal situation.
Yes, the biggest problem for New York though, in any sort of trade with Carmelo Anthony, with the whole salary and how they have to line up and how things have to not necessarily be dollar for dollar, but they have to be close. New York has no draft picks. They really do. If you look at their draft picks and what they do have for the next several years, they have nothing. They have no trade chip in terms of draft picks whatsoever. They've given away their draft picks in just about every bad move that they've made, and they've got nothing left. So the reason why the Clippers are that team to be turned into a quote-unquote super team is because they're already more than halfway there. They've got Chris Paul, who is still, I would say, at least a top three point guard in the NBA. Is that fair? I mean, is he still top three?
Yeah, I would say top three. I mean, and if you want, even if you want to debate, you got to say at least top five, even if you want to debate it. So he's up there, definitely.
Right, and then you've got Blake Griffin. And the way that he plays four is not conventional anymore. Almost everybody is a stretch four. But even Blake Griffin is probably close to top five power forwards in the league. Or if you're going to say conventional four or stretch four, he's there. He has solid numbers. So you have top five point guard, top five power forward, and then you've got DeAndre Jordan, who in his own right is a very solid player. I mean, you said that his free throw shooting, I mean, it is terrible, but if we look at it, it's higher than it's been in years, and it's 52%. So he's there. He's 52% and he's career 43. So I mean, he's not going to, I don't even really think he's going to outshoot a bad high school player at this point from the free throw line, but I mean, that's not what he does. So they really do. They need another big name, I think. I think that's what's missing. And really the whole Chris Paul injury, it just kind of sticks a fork in their season in a way, because with the Western Conference, with the way that things are for all of these teams, and with Memphis behind them and Utah behind them and Oklahoma City behind them, they're close enough to where if the Clippers really go on a slide, they could be a 7 seed, and then we're looking at them playing Houston or the Spurs in the first round and being eliminated. Now, we've heard these guys, we've heard Chris Paul, Dwayne Wade, Carmelo Anthony, and LeBron James all say that they want to play together, and I really don't think that the Clippers are the spot, but it is probably the best place for all of them to land if it was ever going to happen, because it is California. California is a beautiful place. It's certainly nicer place to live and better weather than all of the cities that these guys are playing in now, with the exception of New York. New York's a beautiful place, but the weather is nothing like California's. So is that really a realistic possibility? And is it something that you could see happening with the Clippers, because the Clippers are in California and Steve Ballmer has loads of money?
I could see Carmelo being there, because as far as the money lines up, I think if you trade Blake away for Carmelo, you might have to throw something else in there, but I think that would work. I couldn't see D-Wade, though.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you have that, and we have Dwayne Wade, and he is in Chicago, but the deal that he signed is a relatively short deal. It's a two-year deal, or it might even be 3 years. But I think it's 2 years, $47 million. I think that's what he ended up getting from the Bulls. And he was offered 2 years, $40 million from the Heat, and he turned it down. So he goes there for two seasons. This is the first season. And there could even potentially be an opt-out after year one. And it is possible that these guys end up together. I mean, maybe they end up together in Cleveland. But if I had my choice between Cleveland and L.A., I mean, I would certainly think that California is the more desirable place for the four of them. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it could be one of those things that LeBron just says, because he is sort of, you feel like sometimes he's that guy that just says things just so you can have a soundbite. But I mean, these guys are all really close and they do hang out together in the off season. So it is a possibility. It's just sad to see this happen to the Clippers, you know, and Doc Rivers. Things have not really worked out for him the way that I think that the Clippers would have hoped. And they really are sort of at this point where it's like, you either need to make a move to improve the team or blow it up. So that's going to do it. That is it for this week, the week of Martin Luther King Day, January 16th, 2017 through the 22nd of January. We will be back next week with another episode of the Two-Man Game. I am Matt Barnes. You can find me on Twitter. Argue with me, agree with me, follow me, whatever you'd like to do, @Matt_Two-Man Game. You can find Chris on Twitter as well, @SimplyHoops with a Z. You can read all of his writing. He's constantly putting out articles and pieces on the NBA at simplyhoops.wordpress.com. That will do it. Thank you, everyone, for listening. This has been another episode of the Two-Man Game. We will talk to everyone out there soon. We are out.